We might just have creamed off the greenwash froth from the top of the climate action pint, and we're left with something that we can actually drink.
When corporations announce a net zero target for 2050, as most of them seem to have done, do they do anything in 2026? My guest today has found out whether long-term net zero is really greenwash. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. I'm Tim Phillips. In the last few years, big business has committed to net zero targets at astonishing speed, but that commitment is still more than two decades away. So in corporate strategy terms, that's several lifetimes. So does the target spur them into action, or simply convince shareholders that they'll take some action, but just not quite yet? Simon Dietz of the London School of Economics and CEPR has just published a discussion paper that tells us what these future commitments mean today. He joins me now. Simon, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim.
Simon, the net zero commitment that we're talking about, in its very basic terms, what does it mean?
So these are corporations that are committing to reducing their emissions of greenhouse gases to net zero by a certain date in the future, usually 2050.
Mm-hmm. And what's the origin of this commitment? When did it all start happening?
Well, at risk of oversimplifying history, the 2015 UN Paris Agreement on climate change included the target of limiting global warming to well below 2 degrees and, slightly surprisingly, also included a stretch target of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees.
Yeah.
Subsequently, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, were tasked with exploring what 1.5 degrees would mean for global emissions pathways. And they concluded that in order to meet the 1.5 degrees goal, emissions should be net zero by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, a wide range of organizations ran with that goal and encouraged corporations to adopt long-term net zero commitments. I'm talking about organizations like the Science-Based Targets Initiative, the UN Race to Zero, and the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, or GFANZ, as it's called.
These organisations, though, they have been very persuasive, it seems. Who's signed up? How many people have signed up?
Well, we collected data on about 2,000 companies from all around the world, large, predominantly publicly listed companies, and we found that an extraordinary 63% of those companies had made a net zero commitment.
That is a
lot. By 2023.
Yes.
And that's up from approximately none in 2018.
Yeah.
So our interest in this topic is partly motivated by this extraordinary diffusion of corporate net zero targets.
Yeah. Now, so we have all these corporations, they've signed up for it. What does that mean they have to do today? What options do they have to do today, having made that pledge?
I think you can think about this in terms of three steps. The first thing that one might expect a corporation that's made a long-term net zero pledge to do is start making changes to its management and governance arrangements in order to deliver it. Then, presumably, the corporation has to actually change its capital spending, its hiring. So we might start to see differences in terms of the factors of production. And then lastly, of course, is the thing that really matters, which is the company's emissions.
Mm-hmm.
So we're interested in whether companies' emissions start to go down because they've promised to bring them down to net zero in the long run.
Right. And who are the net zero police? Who is monitoring their progress?
That's an interesting question. There is no official body responsible globally for policing this. And an important contextual fact is that a lot of the information provided by companies and the commitments themselves are mostly voluntary in nature.
Yeah.
And so what you then have is an ecosystem of organizations, some of which are for profit and some of which are not for profit, who are collecting information on what companies are doing and trying to hold them to account.
Now, I would think if I was a chief executive and I'd signed up to this, my tenure as chief executive is not going to last until 2050. There must be a temptation to think, OK, we'll start doing something about this, but not yet. If corporations sign up for this, they don't do anything about it right now and they kick the can down the road. Is that bad for them? Is it bad for the planet?
Well, it's unambiguously bad for the planet.
Uh-huh.
And the reason for that is that global warming depends on cumulative carbon dioxide emissions. So it doesn't just depend on the endpoint, it depends on the pathway from now until the endpoint. So if companies were to hypothetically do nothing until 2049,
right,
and then cut their emissions all at once to zero, that would actually deliver us a lot more warming than if companies were to gradually reduce their emissions between now and then. So it's cumulative emissions that matter, and that's why postponing action is unambiguously bad for the planet. Whether it's bad for individual companies depends critically, I think, on the policy environment and on wider society. Climate change is an externality. Mm-hmm. So there's always an incentive for any actor in the economy, be it an individual or a company, to try to free ride on the efforts of others to meet our climate goals. And so for some companies, there could be an option value, essentially, in waiting and seeing whether the regulatory pressure comes down in the future or whether the societal pressure comes down or not.
I guess if we were also being generous to them, whether or not some technology shows up that would make it cheaper or easier for them to get to net zero.
Yes, exactly. I mean, meeting net zero unquestionably involves deploying new technologies. New technologies also tend to become cheaper over time. And so there is also an incentive to wait for things to become easier.
Recently, when we spoke to Rick van der Ploeg of the University of Oxford, he told us that gradual multi-year changes in the habits that net zero policies try to target just don't go far enough. And we need to be much braver to avoid backsliding. But what does this mean in practice? Find out by listening to our episode, A Big Push for Climate Policy, from November 2025, wherever you get your podcasts.
So what question did you want to investigate in this research?
Quite simply, we wanted to understand whether firms who have made net zero commitments have actually taken any action to implement the commitments compared with firms who haven't made such commitments.
Okay, but with all the environmental reporting that we see these days, and because companies are putting it in their reports, how come we don't know the answer to this already?
Well, there is research on corporate environmental targets more generally.
Yeah.
But historically, corporate environmental targets have been of a more limited form. They've tended to be short or medium term in nature and primarily concern firms' operational environmental impacts. I think what's interesting about long-term net zero targets is firstly that they're long-term.
Yep.
Secondly, that since they require getting emissions to net zero, they involve a lot of uncertainty and interdependencies with technology and policy and markets. And they are a relatively recent phenomenon. And so why don't we know the answer? Well, I think that we are only just getting into the window now where it's reasonable to ask whether long-term net zero targets have actually had any effect, since we started to see them diffusing around 2019, 2020. We're only just now getting into the window worth asking the question.
I see. These changes that they make, you don't see the effect of these changes in a month or a quarter.
Exactly. So if we'd written this paper 5 years ago, we would have nothing to show because the whole diffusive process was just beginning. Conversely, if we wait another 5 years to ask this question, well, we would have more data. We'd be able to take a longer view. But the reason that we're asking the question now is that there's a live discussion about whether corporate climate action actually works as a theory of change.
It would have been a very short podcast if we'd have done it 5 years ago, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. It would.
So, however, now you have many more companies that you can investigate. What did you choose as your sample?
We have a sample of up to about 2,000 companies. These are, as I mentioned, large, almost entirely publicly listed companies, mm-hmm. From across the world and from across the economy. We do oversample high emission sectors like electricity, steel, cement, chemicals. And the reason for that is that these are the companies that actually matter from a climate point of view. So you could compare our sample with a traditional equity index like the Russell 2000 or something like that. That kind of index would have many more services and technology companies in it. But our sample also has companies like that, but puts more emphasis on companies in the energy sector, the industrial sector, and the transport sector that are actually responsible for emitting the greenhouse gases.
And I guess for those companies, strategically, it's more salient whether they make this pledge.
Exactly.
Now, to do this, what reliable sources of data can you lean on?
Well, it's interesting that you use the term reliable, because actually measurement is notoriously difficult.
I've been down this road before.
In this area. So there are lots of well-known problems with corporate emissions data and also with ESG data. And our basic solution to this problem is in two parts. The first part is to simply throw a lot of data at the problem. So we collect data from a variety of sources on a variety of different outcome metrics, including emissions, but also management and governance arrangements, so that if we find something across these different measures, then hopefully we have something robust. And the other strategy we follow is to use some of our own data. So I work in the Transition Pathway Initiative Global Climate Transition Centre, the TPI Centre for short, and we generate some of our own data on corporate emissions and corporate management and governance, and we use those data too.
And with all of that, you feel reasonably confident that you have an accurate readout on what's happening within these 2,000 organisations?
I think it would be irresponsible of me to go that far. I think we do about as well as we can in terms of trying to get around the measurement problems. I think we do about as well as we can in terms of trying to identify cause and effect. But there are some fundamental limitations that we run up against. The data still look noisy in various ways, and we can't conclusively prove cause and effect, because the fundamental problem that we face in this area is that in almost all settings, companies make net zero commitments voluntarily. And so they select into making net zero commitments. That means you might expect firms that are already green to be more likely to make net zero commitments. And then if you subsequently find a positive effect of those commitments, how do we know it's the commitment itself versus the fact that the firm was already green? That's the sort of the difficulty that we're running up against in this area.
I don't know quite how to ask the next question then, but it's, what is the effect of the commitment on emissions?
We find that firms that adopt long-term net zero commitments do reduce their emissions relative to firms that don't.
They've reduced already?
Yes, they've already reduced. In the first few years after making a commitment, it seems like they do reduce their emissions compared with companies that don't make these commitments. But the caveat is the data are noisy, so that the confidence intervals around our estimates are wide. And we can't rule out the possibility, statistically, that the effect is zero.
Okay. You also mentioned management. What has been the effect on management?
One might expect that the effect on emissions might take time for a company to implement the sorts of technologies and measures that would actually reduce emissions. Whereas one might expect to see a more rapid effect on a firm's management and governance arrangements.
Yes.
So that's the other thing we look at. And here we find something quite intriguing. We don't find that firms who've made net zero commitments change their management across the board, but we do find that these firms, the ones that make the commitments, are more likely to implement a set of relatively demanding, relatively strategic management practices to do with climate change. For example, introducing an internal carbon price for the purposes of capital budgeting, or undertaking scenario planning for climate change. And what we also find is that not only is there a positive effect on these kinds of management practices, which is statistically significant, unlike the emissions effect, we also find that this effect starts the year before the net zero commitment is made. So there is, so to speak, an anticipation effect. The interpretation we put on this is that these firms are making a broader pivot towards net zero, and their public commitment to net zero is merely one part of that. And if you think about it, it seems natural that a firm would do its homework before it goes public with the commitment, and that seems to be what we're finding.
Yeah, so in your paper, you see the changes in the strategy and carbon pricing internally and scenario planning. But from what you're also saying, these are not necessarily triggered by the announcement. The announcement is part of a more general evolution of the strategy.
That's exactly right. So what we appear to be seeing here is firms making a decision, which we as researchers from the outside can't observe. They're making a decision to pivot towards net zero. In making that decision, they're implementing a range of changes in the organisation, which start with changes to management and governance and end with reductions in emissions. And the net zero commitment is part of that package.
Simon, is there a chance that this is all just public relations and they would have made the changes anyway?
It's the great question. It's unlikely that companies would make this pivot without making a public net zero commitment, because the public net zero commitment would seem to have some communication and signalling value. The other thing to say, though, is that if one buys this story of companies pivoting and making a commitment as part of that, then it's the pivot itself that's important, isn't it? It's what causes companies to pivot towards net zero. Now, that is actually not something that we're asking in this paper. That is a different question. And there can be various drivers for that, including regulatory pressure. So I could give you the example of an electric utility operating in Europe. It's operating within a strong regulatory framework, which is guiding it towards net zero. And so the net zero commitment strongly reflects regulatory pressure. But for other companies, such as, say, banks or oil companies based in the United States, there isn't the same kind of regulatory pressure, and this is probably better seen as an effort to manage customer and wider stakeholder interests and pressures.
As you say, this commitment is a signal, a very strong signal, a very unusual signal when we think about corporate strategy. If I am an investor, if I am a policymaker, should I be paying attention to the timing of this net zero announcement? Or based on what you're saying, should I do the harder but perhaps more significant job of looking under the hood at this and seeing what's already in place within the companies, the mechanisms for reducing emissions?
I think that long-term net zero commitments have value, and our results are more in the direction of suggesting that they have driven positive change than that they have had no effect. And so if I'm an investor, then yes, I would still be encouraging my investee companies to make long-term net zero commitments. However, you're absolutely right that these long-term commitments, given their long-term nature, given the uncertainties, they need to be backed with some scaffolding to actually achieve them. The sorts of things that are obvious here include interim targets to reduce emissions, transparency on and targets to change the company's capital expenditures, and other kinds of intermediate steps that companies would need to take in order to reduce emissions.
If we think about the external pressures, around the time that many of these organizations would have made their net zero commitment, it really was the thing to do. It was considered to be very natural. The political environment has rather swung against this now. In the UK,
you see that the countries that have been most rigorous about implementing the Paris Accords, the attempts to get to net zero, they're the ones whose economies have performed the worst.
Definitely in the US.
No country on earth will get to net zero on 2050, but the urgent efforts trying to do it have just driven up energy prices, move industries out.
In Europe as well. We've seen organisations like the Net Zero Banking Alliance. They've stalled in their efforts, haven't they? Do your results imply that corporations are still committed?
Well, I think there are a few things to say in response to this question. Firstly, just going back to our paper, our results are more suggestive that net zero targets have made a difference. They don't suggest that corporate net zero commitments are simply empty promises. Thinking more in terms of the recent ESG backlash, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, let's call it that.
Then it's too early to see in the data the extent of this backlash. It certainly doesn't show up in the data we use in this paper, and it's only just beginning to show up in data on corporate climate action more broadly. There are obviously these celebrated cases of companies that are household names rowing back on their net zero commitments. Mm. But there are many companies that are staying the course, for example, because they are under enduring regulatory pressure or because they are operating in jurisdictions where they are not under the same stakeholder pressure to reverse their commitments. So at the end of the day, we'll see how this goes. And it's one of these cases probably of, is the glass half full or the glass half empty? If the commitments that are being reversed are commitments that were fundamentally unserious in the first place, companies, for example, just perceived their social license to operate as requiring a net zero target, who subsequently perceived their social license to operate as not requiring a net zero target, then the fact that they've withdrawn these commitments is neither here nor there. They were never serious in the first place.
They would have never have made it to 2050.
Right. So that's the glass half full perspective, in a way, that we might just have creamed off the greenwash froth from the top of the climate action pint and we're left with something that we can actually drink.
It does show, however, though, that the commitment to net zero and the language around it can be very volatile, doesn't it? So would you support, knowing what you know from this research, would you support more regulation for milestones, targets along the way? Especially, as you say, it's unambiguously good for the planet if these commitments are acted on early.
Well, I think that our research is consistent with something that I think we've known for quite a long time. Voluntary action alone is likely to be insufficient because climate change is an externality. We're not going to meet global climate goals without a strong global regulatory framework, which would include such things as carbon pricing, as support for clean technologies. All that having been said, there is likely to still be some value in making long-term commitments as a form of coordination device, where everybody knows that everybody is pointing in roughly the same direction and can have confidence in that and can coordinate their actions to eventually bring temperature increase under control.
It's fascinating to find out the gap between some of the rhetoric about the ESG backlash and what's actually going on. Simon, thanks for talking about it.
My pleasure.
The paper is called Corporate Net Zero Targets. Have They Achieved Anything? Authors Simon Dietz and Nicholas Hastreiter. It is discussion paper 21441 at CPR.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, can we convince teams to read newspapers?